Welcome to the Inside Out Style Podcast with Imogen Lamport, your scientist of style. Each episode, you'll get real-world style advice for women of every size, shape, and age. And now, here's Imogen.
Hi, it's Imogen Lamport from Inside Out Style, here to answer your colour and style questions. Let's see what I've got today. In my little style question, lucky dip. Don't forget, you can always send me a message, email me, leave a question on my Inside Out Facebook group or page, and of course, I will answer them, pop them into my lucky dip, and I'll answer them in future upcoming sessions. So Cynthia says, in my experience, do the majority of people have a warm or a cool undertone? I would actually say it's fairly half-half. It really depends where you come from, what your background is. I tend to find maybe in Australia there's slightly more warm people than cool people, but you'd probably go to some cultures where there's more cool people than warm people. So really, it's probably spread over the world fairly evenly split. I do find, say, if I go to Southeast Asia, such as Thailand or Malaysia, there are definitely more warm people there. But if I, you know, and they are deeper, of course, they're darker, they've got naturally dark hair. Versus if I went to somewhere like Sweden, I'd probably find many more light people and with fair hair. So, you know, it really varies. If I go to Africa, I'm going to find many more dark people. And some will be warmer and some will be cooler. So as with all skins, there is a variety in there. And of course, too, not only is there variety in warm and cool, in that undertone, we also have a variety in light and dark. So how light or how dark people are, dark hair versus light hair. And we also have intensity. So how bright or how muted people are. What I tend to notice is the more kind of monocultural someone is, so they come from, say, one of those places where more people look the same. So India, Japan, some of these countries, you know, parts of China, you'll tend to have more brighter people. And that is because we're not kind of diluting the gene pool as such with lots of different colouring. Come to Australia, which is very multicultural. It's probably one of the most multicultural places in the world, where it's very integrated as well, so where all the cultures mix. You'll tend to find there's a lot more muted people. And this is because if you think about it, like if you are doing a painting, so imagine you're going to do some painting, you've got some different colours, and you've got your water to wash your brush out. And so you get your first colour, so we get some blue, and we do some painting with our blue. And then, so I've just got this little hair in my eye. And then, you know, I do the painting in the blue, and then I wash my, you know, brush out in the water, and then I get some green, and I do some painting, and then I wash my brush out, and the water goes blue, and then it goes greeny blue, and then I get some red, and then suddenly the water starts going kind of murky, and then I get some yellow, and it gets very murky. So this is like, imagine your heritage. You've got someone with, you know, warm colouring who marries someone with cool colouring, and they have children, so we get a more mix of warm and cool colouring, and we've got a, you know, a redhead and a blonde and a brunette, and then, you know, blue eyes and brown eyes and green eyes, and they all start mixing up. And what starts happening is that the colouring becomes less clear. Versus if I am marrying and having children with someone who looks exactly like me, so I've got brown eyes and brown hair, and they've got brown eyes and brown hair, I'm going to have much more clearer colouring. So you'll tend to notice the more monocultural a place, the more clear, the brighter the colouring, versus the more multicultural a place is, the more you'll tend to get more muted colouring. So really, there is no one answer. It really depends where you come from in the world. And then what also happens is, of course, age changes us. So when we're young, we're at our brightest. So around 15 to 30 is usually the brightest time of our life when we've got our brightest colouring. And then as we get older and we notice the pigment from going from the hair, but also pigment from the skin goes, it changes. I used to have very, very white skin. I was so white, I could never buy a foundation white enough. And I used to have black hair. I was that true Snow White, had very bright, clear, cool colouring. As I've gotten older and my hair is really grey and I've had to go light, so what's happened is I've gone from dark hair to light hair. So that's completely changed one aspect of my colouring. And then I've gone from a very brighter group and I'm softening down. So if I dyed my hair back, this is why that sort of thing, when people say, oh, I dyed it to my natural colour, like the colour they had when they were a teenager, but it's not the natural colour they have today. So your natural colour is actually what's growing out of your head right this moment. It's not what you had when you were 10 or 15 or 20 or 2 or whatever other age. It's the colour that's growing out now. And this is why when people dye their hair back to that natural colour and you think it looks really harsh, particularly when it's too dark, it's because you don't have the skin you used to have when you had that hair colour. You would have had a more clear skin, you would have had a more bright skin that worked with that hair colour. Now you've got a softer skin and you need to have softer hair. And this is why, you know, we tend to go lighter and softer with colours as we age. So hopefully that kind of answers that part of the question you have, Cynthia. So in my colour system, the absolute colour system with 18 different palettes, which is the most common palette and which is the most unusual? So this is, of course, really depends where you come from. If we are in, Scandinavia, where maybe there's a lot of blondes, I'm going to have a lot more people in the light palettes. If I have got people, if I'm in Southeast Asia or India or somewhere like that, I'm going to have a lot more people in the dark palettes. If I'm in America, the UK, Australia, much more multicultural, then I'm probably going to have more people, like I'm going to have a variety of people. And then of course it depends on who my clients are. Who are the people who are coming to see me to have a colour analysis? Now, because I'm middle-aged, I tend to attract more people who are older rather than 20-year-olds. Also, I tend to find that less 20-year-olds want to pay for advice. Or they might not have the income to pay for that advice as well. So it is one of those things that I tend to find that I have way more muted groups, more smoky people than I have really bright people. And that's partly because who I'm actually seeing. Also too, so when we talked about that more multicultural, that it tends to mute down the colouring naturally. So my children, their father is warm and I am cool. And both my kids are actually got quite muted colouring, even though they are younger. So they will never have the brightness I had. And so this is what, when we have these, the mixing of those different genes together, we get more muted colouring. So the more muted groups, so rather than our really bright groups, our more muted groups tend to be more common. And then we have the outlier groups, I often think, which are the really light groups, tranquil and exquisite, the really dark groups, mysterious and opulent. The really bright groups, dynamic and radiant. These are also less common than anything that's a bit more medium. So like a medium deep rather than a really dark, a medium light rather than a really light. And the softer, like, so as we go into the softer groups, these are always more common. So I tend to find, particularly if I have a group of people where, we're getting a bit older, skin or colors softened down, that there are an awful lot, my probably most common group out of all of them would probably be intriguing. And this is because, particularly as people age, we get lighter, the hair ends up lighter. So as we go gray, we get lighter. So even if we're choosing to dye our hair, we're dyeing our hair to a lighter color rather than a darker color. So we get lighter. And so basically what happens, and we get softer, that a lot of, practically the entire warm section of the population ends up intriguing. And then with the cools, we end up in serene as we get lighter and softer. We'll go through other things, but we end up there. There's a lot of sublimes. There are a lot of serenes, a lot of intriguings, a lot of spices, a lot of exotics, a lot of elegance. They're probably the most common out of all of them. But in the end, what's interesting when I, I'm doing the print runs and I'm working out how many I, I need to order, intriguing's the one I've always bought the most of. I've had the most printed at a time. And so I'd say probably intriguing is my most common, but that's partly to do with who my audience is, who my clients are, that they are not the 20-year-olds. There's plenty of, 20-year-olds who are brighter, but they're not coming to have their colour analysis with me. So there you go, a little bit of an idea of different colours and what's more common than others. Okay, next question comes from Andrea, who says, dark jeans are a wardrobe staple and go anywhere in casual California, but look horrible with my overall light, intriguing palette. Light jeans are less dressy. Any suggestions? So this is where you may not go as dark. So going, I know that a really dark jean is always kind of like a more dressy jean. So if I want to wear a dark jean and have an overall lighter palette, what I need to think about is making sure that I'm not just doing dark jeans with a light top. I need to put that medium color in between. So kind of have the dark, you know, with a medium color and then the light color. So I'm going to step that through, thinking about that walking up and down the stairs, rather than jumping from light to dark, stepping through from light to dark certainly makes it easier. So that's one way of wearing them, is so thinking about stepping through, and often even like putting them back with some sort of pattern that's got lighter and darker elements with them. That's another way, if you have a top or a blouse or a jacket or something where we've got those lighter and darker elements. Remembering to keep your overall ideal value, so that is the similar value or lightness or darkness to the color of your hair, in your like a jacket or topper, because that's right next to your face. It's what we see most of. Now, so how do I make less dark jeans look a little bit more dressy? So what I might think about is, instead of going for a really light colored jean, I could go for a medium, and then I'm looking for minimal distressing. The more distressing we have on jeans, the more casual they become. So of course, rips are a form of distressing, and of course that's a much more casual jean. It's a less formal jean than something that's got no rips. And then I look at how much whiskering, like I look for minimal whiskering, because that too, when the more kind of even the color is, the more dressy it is. Or we can go for really light color jean. If we go for more of a white or off-white jean, so if you're intriguing palette, which is warm, I'd go for an off-white rather than a bright white. That also can look quite dressy, rather than going the dark, because white is a color that's kind of a bit hard to keep clean. And so therefore we tend not to wear it all day, every day. It tends to be something that's a little bit more special occasion. So it can be more dressy. So that's the other way. Going for a light color jean is your other option. Then that'll work better with your palette. But if you're going for a more medium color, instead of going for so dark, do think about like minimal distressing. And I know it can be hard to buy, because often you really notice the distressing on these things, and they often put it on for interest and detail and all that kind of stuff. Wish they wouldn't, but that would be what I would be looking for. Is there anything else in this question? Let me have a quick look. Yeah, dibs out my club museum. So I would say either wear the dark, but remember, wear it in a light to dark. So moving through the different values, light with medium with dark, or go for overall light. Okay, next question. Okay, Sim says, I have an hourglass with a protruding stomach. Where do I end my tops, and can I wear high-waisted pants? So, whatever your body shape is, if you have a little bit of tum, which I think most women do, particularly if you've had kids, you know, it's all been stretched out of shape. And also, you know, like it's one of those things that most women do have. It's pretty normal. Often it never looks as big to everybody else as it looks to yourself. It's one of those things. I think somehow when we're looking down at it, it looks bigger to us than when people are looking at us. That said, the ideal place to end a top when you have a little bit of a tummy is just below the peak of the tummy. So the tummy kind of bows out, and what we want to do is, we don't want to end it above the peak, because then what happens is it becomes more obvious. If we end the top below it, like if we end it at the bottom of the stomach, what happens is we actually then cup the stomach and make it look more prominent. What we actually want to do is, where the peak is, we want to end the top just below the peak. So just this little bit below, and to work out where it is exactly on you, get in front of a mirror, you know, and move a top up and down. So if we go just below the peak, it seems to like make the tummy disappear a whole lot. It cuts it in half, makes it a little bit smaller, and removes the kind of the bow from it, the curvature from it. So that is the best place to end your tops, is just below the peak. Other things to think about with tops is not having a horizontal hemline, because a horizontal make things broader. So it's going to make your tummy look bigger. So instead, look for tops that have a curved hem, where they go up at the side and a little bit down at the front. A little bit loose around the tummy too can be much more flattering, rather than something that is clinging to your stomach. So there's some little tips on finding, you know, what top length to wear with your little protruding stomach. Can I wear high-waisted pants? It would probably really depend on the pant, its construction, and whether or not it cups your stomach, because that's the thing too. I remember back in the 90s and the 80s when high-waisted pants were all the go, and that's all we wore. I was much younger and slimmer then, that I always felt like I had a bit of a tummy, and I've always had a bit of a tummy, but it kind of made it protrude. So when you have a little bit of a retreating stomach, generally high-waisted pants aren't as flattering as a mid-rise because the mid-rise usually cuts you across that kind of just past that widest point. So it's actually often more flattering. The high-waisted pants, what happens is it comes in and then we see the bowing out. So I'd say probably high-waisted pants may not be your best pant kind of, you know, a rise. You might go for something a little bit lower than that. So there you go. There's three questions today. Thank you for your questions. Please do feel free to send me your questions for future sessions. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Inside Out Style with Imogen Lamport. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast for more actionable style and color tips. And don't forget to visit InsideOutStyleBlog.com, where you will discover Imogen's encyclopedia of color and style advice to help you become your most stylish self. If you're enjoying what's here, please leave a review so we can bring you more of the content that helps you adore your wardrobe more, so you can get up, get dressed, and get out the door looking and feeling fabulous every single day.